And good morning. This is NPR News. I'm Mike Mulcahy. Minnesota Democrats have a choice to make. In just 4 days, the primary election will decide which DFL candidate for governor will be on the ballot in November. There are three top contenders, and just one will move on to the general election based on how you vote. Those top three contenders are here with me today in the UBS Forum. This is your chance, maybe your last chance, to meet the candidates before you make up your mind about who to vote for in Tuesday's primary election. So I'm very pleased to welcome today State Representative Erin Murphy. She's the DFL-endorsed candidate. Minnesota Attorney General Lori Swanson, who's the most recent candidate to enter the race, and Congressman Tim Walz from Minnesota's 1st District. Thank you all for being here. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Good morning, Mike.
As for the rules, there basically aren't any rules. We just want everybody to have a fair chance to talk. We'll forego the opening statements, but I'll give you time for a closing statement at the end. We won't take any phone calls today. I did ask listeners before the broadcast to send along some questions, and many people did, so I'll work some of those in as we go along. So let me start with a question for you, Lori Swanson, mm-hmm. Attorney General. That online site, The Intercept, has been running a couple of articles this week about you using staff in your office to do political work and basically rewarding those who did work with higher pay and promotions. A former employee of yours, DeAndre Norman, told The Intercept he recruited office employees on your behalf to do political work. Why shouldn't those allegations be taken seriously?
Well, first of all, The Intercept is a widely discredited blog owned by a billionaire who is an investment partner with another billionaire who happens to own and control a couple of large multinational corporations that I've taken down as Attorney General. One is called Accretive Health, which embedded debt collectors into hospital emergency rooms and shook down people at the worst time of their life. The other is called National Arbitration Forum, which was a large credit card arbitration company, the largest in the world, and we shut them down. In the case of Accretive Health, we shut that down and we stopped it from engaging in business in the state of Minnesota. Those were very tough cases. I cost that billionaire hundreds of millions of dollars through the work of the office. And when you do something like that, you get a target on your back. And here we are 5 days before a primary election, and we're seeing some anonymous stories come out, other stories come out. The truth of the matter is people who participate in the political process in the Attorney General's office, whether for me or any other candidate, do so on their own time, not on the clock of the government. And anybody who gets raises or promotions in the office gets them based solely on merit and based upon their work responsibilities, period.
Let me ask the other candidates. Have you ever required your staff to do political work? Representative Murphy, start with you.
Well, thanks for the great question. And no, I haven't. And when you work in the House of Representatives, when you serve there, you don't have a lot of staff in the first place. So, no, that's not an issue for me. And I will tell you that this is an issue that Minnesotans will consider as we head into these last days of the election, and it's important. But what I really hear from people is how frustrated they are with this kind of politics, the politics of yesterday. And we got into this race 20 months ago. I did on purpose because I wanted to make sure I was building a campaign and putting Minnesotans in the center of it, the issues that they're worried about, the issues that matter to them, and to build a campaign and a coalition that can actually confront the tough issues that we face in the state of Minnesota. And that's what I'm going to do when I'm elected.
Congressman Walz.
Yeah, absolutely not. And concerning, but I think for me, it's always in many of these cases the response to this. I'd like to point out the Star Tribune is covering this story, as is the station we're on right now. So we're in a very dangerous spot, I believe, in our country where anything being reported is dismissed as fake news, and we need to find that out. But I would agree with Erin on this. Erin and I have been out on this trail for a long time. We've been talking to a lot of people working hard. That gives an opportunity. This is a job interview to the people of Minnesota to let them see what their leadership looks like and let them to ask questions over many, many months. Let them see who you are. So I'm proud to hear Minnesotans again reject this notion of a small petty politics, reject the notion of that we shouldn't be out talking healthcare, education, and I think that's the leadership they expect from their next governor.
And Lori Swanson, I'll give you a final word if you want to say anything else here.
Well, I think it is important we talk about the important issues, facing this election. One of the things I hear about on the campaign trail more than anything is people are so tired of the partisan politics and the gridlock. It gets in the way of progress. And when you see kind of the constant bickering and endless gridlock, it means people aren't talking about getting their families good jobs, good health care, good education. And I think that's what the public wants us to be talking about is how are we going to improve their lives? How are we going to lead in a way that makes a difference so that as a senior citizen, you can retire with dignity. As a parent, you can get your kid a good and affordable education. As a worker, you can have a job that actually supports your family. Those are the important issues facing the state of Minnesota.
All right. Well, let me ask another question then. Mark Dayton, a Democrat, is leaving the governor's office after 8 years. What kind of job do you think he's done? And will you continue many of his policies? Or are there specific places where you would make a clean break with Mark Dayton? And Congressman Walz, let's start with you on that.
Yeah, I believe Governor Dayton's done a fine job for Minnesota. He came in a fiscal mess. He spoke honestly to Minnesotans about what it would take to clean that up. He budgeted accordingly. He made investments in things that are important and critical to Minnesotans, like early childhood education. But I think one of the things is that leadership styles look very different. And I have made the case to Minnesotans, and they've seen my style over the last 12 years serving them in southern Minnesota, that this is a time that we need to build new coalitions. This is a time that we need consensus building. This is the time that we need to move initiatives forward. If they're clean water initiatives that we all care about, we have to build that forward. So I think Governor Dayton has laid down markers for the next governor, but I think it's going to be critically important that a leadership style that is able to bring Minnesota around a common vision, one Minnesota, will continue to move what Minnesotans are asking for: good education, quality health care. Don't make us make false choices between economic activities and the environment, because we can do that. And as governor, I believe I have the skills to do that.
Lori Swanson, what do you think of Governor Dayton's legacy, and would you break from it anyway?
Well, yeah, I give Governor Dayton high marks in education. He said at the beginning of his term he wanted to increase education each year that he was governor. I believe he did that. I give him high marks in investing in our kids. I inherited from my grandma a 1949 edition of National Geographic magazine, and it talks about Minnesota, and in there it says that the best asset of Minnesota is found between the ears of our children, and I believe that too, and I give him high marks there. And I'll also give him high marks on the integrity with which he handled the budget, making sure that it's honest, that it's transparent, that we ended some of the shifts, and he's been very transparent about that. In terms of my own style, I'm somebody who gets results, who focuses on the people's business. I'm somebody who gets things done. What I want to do, even before I take office, is sit down with all 201 legislators, Republicans and Democrats, and break bread with them, get to know them, their families, what are their hopes, their dreams. The people who run for public office are not bad people. Nobody runs for office saying, I'm going to be a jerk or I'm going to have more gridlock. Yet we see it in St. Paul. We see it in Washington, where there is a lot of gridlock. And when you have that, it means stuff's not happening for the public. So as Attorney General, what my track record has been is focusing on problem solving, taking big problems like a million dollar pollution issue in the East Metropolitan area, getting the biggest settlement in Minnesota history and cleaning up the drinking water. And I'm going to take the same kind of hands-on approach as governor.
Erin Murphy.
So I think Governor Dayton has demonstrated over 8 years his real devotion to the people of Minnesota. I share that, and I am really delighted to have the endorsement of Governor Mark Dayton in this race. I am going to continue the work that I have been doing for the last 12 years, and that is spending my time with the people of Minnesota all over the state. And I'm going to continue to bring their powerful voices to the Capitol, because breaking bread with the legislature is not going to break up the gridlock inside that Capitol. The powerful voices of Minnesotans who are demanding action on the issues that are important to their communities is the way we're going to break that gridlock. And we have built a coalition in this race to actually move an agenda that serves and meets the needs of the people of Minnesota going forward. And that's why I'm so excited about this campaign. We've been campaigning for 20 months, and Minnesotans have been showing up, coming out of the 2016 election, resisting and protesting and marching. And they are now organizing, standing up, and demanding urgent action on the toughest issues that we face. And I have faith in our capacity to actually take those issues on. I'm going to continue working with the people of Minnesota. I'm going to open up 8 regional offices so we can stitch ourselves back together again and bring our powerful voices to bear on that legislative process and move an agenda that builds our future.
Well, let me ask you this. There were some well-publicized problems with the MNLAR system, and MNSure, the online health exchange, cost a lot of money, didn't work very well. Why should taxpayers trust Democrats, and specifically you, to be a good steward of their money? And Aaron Murphy, we'll start with you.
You know, before I served in the legislature, I was the executive director of a large organization and had the responsibility for its strategic vision and its operations. I learned how to do that work, and I'm good at it. I have served in the legislature now for a number of years and have watched the legislature give to the administration really tough jobs to do, sometimes without the right technology, sometimes without the right money. I'm going to be really clear with the legislature that if they're asking us to take on a job, they've got to give us the tools to make it work. And sometimes the legislature doesn't abide by that, and sometimes we haven't heard that clearly enough from the administration. So I do have the experience, the operational experience. I did that. I did that as a registered nurse where there were really difficult challenges in front of us and you can't make mistakes. I will do that as the next governor.
Tim Walz.
Minnesotans have every right to be frustrated when the services that the government is responsible for providing, when those don't happen, we need to make sure that there's corrections made. That's all about leadership. And my case that especially on these legacy systems, the Minlar system could just be a precursor for others. As we start shifting off of legacy technology systems, this becomes very, very difficult challenge. And it's the reason that it's an issue that I spoke about for 12 years in Congress, and we're finally on the road to correcting it. This idea of making sure that the Department of Defense and the VA were coordinating with one electronic health record and being able to put in place the safeguards with the leadership we've shown, something that hasn't happened in Congress in decades. We created an incredible new oversight mechanism of a subcommittee working with technology experts to make sure that when we start to implement this $20 billion project that will improve the care of veterans, that the oversight and the accountability is there. As governor, as someone who believes that there is a role for government to help improve lives of Minnesotans and deliver services, it's going to take that voice, that experience, to be able to make sure that what happened at Minlars not only doesn't happen again, but we continue to make improvements and efficiencies across government agencies.
Lori Swanson, what about you? Why should we trust you to be a good steward of taxpayer dollars?
Well, in the Attorney General's office, our budget is about 25% smaller than when I took office in inflation-adjusted dollars, yet we're doing significantly more work than when I took office. When you lead an executive branch agency, it's important to do it in a way that gets results, that's effective, that solves problems, that gets things done for people. That's what we've done in the Attorney General's office on a wide variety of issues. I mentioned cleaning up the drinking water in the East Metropolitan area. We had a dispute between the largest children's hospital and the largest insurance company, and it was going on and in the news, and 60,000 kids had their lives in the balance because of that. I was able to call the two CEOs together and say, would you come into the office? Let's try to fix that and solve that problem. And we did, and we got the contract dispute resolved. And that's the kind of attorney general's office I've run. That's the kind of governor's office I'm going to run. The people of Minnesota have every right to be thoroughly disappointed with what happened on Minlars. Not being able to access your title on time is not appropriate. I think that, you know, why they took down the one computer system before they knew the other computer system was working, I don't understand. There are 49 other states. One of the things I'm going to look to is how do the other states handle some of these information technology problems? What are they doing right? And I'm going to look toward the audits as well that the legislative auditor is going to do. They have four audits underway on Minlars, both in terms of looking at what happened and what went wrong, but how do other states handle things and how can we avoid those kind of problems going forward? The people of the state of Minnesota have an absolute right to have a functioning government that doesn't have those kind of problems.
Let me bring in some listener questions. I'm sure you've heard this criticism before, and you'll hear it again if you're on the ballot in November. Democrats want open borders. They want sanctuary cities. They won't enforce immigration laws. Tim Walz, how do you respond to that?
Well, that is, of course, false, and it feeds into a narrative that stops us from making progress on an issue that not only should not divide us, but should unify us as a nation of immigrants, as a people that understand what the great American experiment, especially here in Minnesota, has given to us. This issue does not have to be as difficult as it is. I remind your listeners that just a few short years ago, we had a bipartisan vote in the United States Senate for comprehensive immigration reform that had over 70 votes. That bill was never heard in the Republican United States Congress. The responsibility, and every sovereign nation has that responsibility, to make sure your borders are secure and make sure you understand who's coming in. But you do that with humanity. You do not do it with what we've seen at the border with over 500 children still separated from their parents. That is not who we are. And Minnesota, when it comes time to making the case to Minnesotans, the federal government's responsibilities for immigration laws and immigration enforcements, local law enforcement's responsibility is to keep our communities safe. When we follow that order, we get reduced crimes, safer communities for everyone. So in Minnesota, it starts out understanding our immigrant neighbors are adding to our economy. They're adding to the richness of our life. But with an understanding, there is a responsibility to make sure that the federal government is enforcing those borders. So as governor of Minnesota, the first and the thing that you can do most often is make sure that it's very clear the respect and the dignity and the moral and ethical clarity of our immigrant community, but then assuring the citizens that the system is working correctly. So the ability, again, to come back at this and listening to some of the rhetoric coming from the Republican side, Democrats care deeply about immigrant communities, the community as a whole, security at the border, and economic security going forward. As governor of Minnesota, this is another case, as the Star Tribune said last weekend, the state needs someone who's a consensus builder to solve our toughest problems. As your governor, that's what I intend to do.
Lori Swanson, Democrats on immigration, you on immigration, would you support the sanctuary city notion?
On immigration, we need to have comprehensive immigration reform in this country. It's something that needs to happen on a bipartisan basis, and it needs to happen from the United States Congress. Now, there's so much dysfunction in Washington. Congress is dysfunctional, and so it's another example of things not happening and not getting done. I think when it comes to immigration, we've got to enforce our policies in a way that's humane. For example, I was one of two attorney generals who stood up a week after Donald Trump got elected and filed a lawsuit to stop the executive order travel ban. Which was unconstitutional, and the courts found it unconstitutional. I was one of a small number of attorney generals who went to court to stop 800,000 young dreamers from being deported. These are children who came to the United States as small kids, and they were going to potentially be deported. 97% of them are in the workforce or in school. They have relied on DACA to get homes, join the military, join the workforce, go to school, start families. I thought that was unfair. And then more recently, I filed a lawsuit against the federal government to stop the family separation policy on the borders. When it comes to borders, we need to secure our borders. We live in a very dangerous world. There are people who want to do this country great harm, and it's important we protect our borders to keep this country safe and to keep Americans safe. When it comes to the sanctuary state issue, I've been a fan and believer in local control and letting local police departments make their own determinations. I have supported local control on that issue as well as other issues such as feedlots in rural Minnesota.
Okay. Erin Murphy on immigration.
So the humanity of people rises to a higher priority for me than do documents and borders. We can make sure that Minnesotans who are living here and working here, who have come from different parts of the world, are full participants in our economy and in our workforce. And frankly, when I think about the demographic changes of the state of Minnesota and workforce shortages across the state, we have a real economic interest in this. And unfortunately, the Congress can't get off the dime on this issue of immigration. And so we have people in Minnesota who are working all across the state. I was just in the southwestern part of the state, in Worthington, in Laverne, in Marshall. We have people who have come from different parts of the world that are fully participating, integrated into our communities. And as the governor, it's my job to look out for all of our interests. So I am not interested in extending law enforcement's reach, the part that I have control of, to ICE. I don't think that's right. And we're seeing Minnesotans being harassed and chased by ICE officers. I don't want our law enforcement to be a part of that. I'm not interested in building a federal detention center. And instead, I am interested here in standing up forthrightly for the people of Minnesota, for our future, for our economic interests. And know this, I am not going to take a safe political vote on the issue of refugees, on the issue of immigrants. It is important that Minnesotans hear clearly from me where I stand and know that that is an issue of values for me. It's an issue of humanity for me. And I have watched Minnesotans take on this issue in their communities and build vibrant, strong economic communities.
Well, let me ask it in just a little more pointed fashion and maybe a short answer, yes and no, to two questions. Should Minnesotans be required by law to show a valid ID to vote? And should undocumented or illegal immigrants be granted driver's licenses? And Tim Walz will just go around.
No and yes. They should not have an ID to vote. And yes, they should have driver's licenses.
Lori Swanson.
You know, on the issue of driver's licenses, you know, you have to balance. You have to balance public safety, and you have to balance that with, you know, the ability of, you know, people to drive. What I would do as governor on that issue is have a task force. I'd convene a working group and a task force and get people together and have a conversation about that issue on driving and what you do about that.
What about an ID to vote?
Oh, no, I don't support photo ID to vote. Absolutely not. In fact, I worked on that issue in 2012 when there was a constitutional amendment, and I think we need to make voting in general as open as we can so that people vote legally, but we open up voting to people.
Erin Murphy.
So I don't support an ID for voting, and no, that is a way to disenfranchise voters, and that's no good for us and no good for our democracy. I do support a driver's license for undocumented Minnesotans, and frankly, we've had an ongoing conversation about this issue across the state for a number of years that I've actually been a part of, where I am watching Minnesotans wrestle with this, understanding the public safety issues, understanding the importance of somebody being able to get to work and to get their kids safely to school, and that means a driver's license for somebody. So I don't need to convene a task force. We've been having this discussion in the state of Minnesota for many years, and I'm ready to act.
That's Erin Murphy. She's one of the DFL candidates for the gubernatorial nomination, which will be decided in Tuesday's primary. Tim Walz is here. He's another candidate, and Lori Swanson here as well. We are live in the UBS Forum today talking about a lot of questions that listeners have submitted, and I have a few more here. It's conceivable that the U.S. Supreme Court in the next few years will give states more power to regulate abortion. Would you sign or allow any bills to become law that would put new restrictions on abortion? And Lori Swanson, let's start with you.
You know, I'm pro-choice. I've always been pro-choice. I believe these issues are between a woman and a physician. And no, I don't support changes to the law.
Erin Murphy.
So I would not support any changes to the law, and will protect a woman's right to choose and to reproductive health care. I remember when I first went to work for the Minnesota Nurses Association, and there was a nurse that I had met. She lives in Benton County. She's still alive, and she made it her practice to sit down with other younger nurses to talk about the experience of women before Roe versus Wade, because she wanted to make sure that we understand the real consequences if this law were to change. I have been a strong advocate for women, for women's reproductive freedom, for their economic security that comes with access to contraception. I've been the author of the Contraception Equity Act. I've been standing with women and families on this issue long before I was elected, and I will be a strong proponent and advocate for our health care as I become the governor of the state.
Tim Walz.
No, I would not sign anything restricting a woman's right to make decisions about her life and her health care choices. I trust women to make this decision. And I also think it's important that the next governor, and I'll do this as your governor, we continue to expand access to preventative care, to reproductive services. It's something that I did in the veterans, in the VA, when they were trying to restrict our soldiers, the very warriors who go to protect our freedoms and trying to restrict our female warriors from having the opportunity to make choices about their health care. We were able to push back some of those and change and expand the opportunity. So in Minnesota, this is a state that we understand that as we get good preventative care, good family planning services, we let people make their choices about their own health care, we all do better for the results of that. So absolutely not. But more importantly, vocal opponent of allowing anything like that to even start to permeate our discussion, because the expansion of those services is the direction we should be going.
A listener question on the other end of life, I guess. Would you propose any policies related to end-of-life care, including right to die or what are called assisted suicide provisions? Erin Murphy, start with you.
So having worked in the care of people at the end of their life, I understand how much families and individuals want some say in those important decisions at that point at the end of somebody's life. And I know there's a coalition that has come together in the state of Minnesota to advance this idea. And as I have talked with them, I've let them know that we need to have a very robust discussion across the state of Minnesota, because I have watched over and over again when Minnesotans are either pushed away from this idea or driven to fear. And that will really hurt the health care of people who are aging, or people who are struggling with cancer, the health care at the end of their life. I'm a supporter of palliative care, of hospice care. We need to expand that. And if the legislature takes up this issue and they litigate it properly, and there has been a full debate across the state of Minnesota, it is something I would consider signing.
Tim Walz.
Well, this issue is very personal for me, and I think for so many Minnesotans. When I was a a young man, a teenager. My little brother was 8. My brothers and sisters and I, along with my mother, sat in a hospital room in O'Neill, Nebraska, and watched as my father, dying of lung cancer, was on life support and no counseling and no one to talk to us. And as a young man, the decision to make is you're hopeful that, that something would happen. That decision to continue that care cost my mother another decade of needing to go back to work to pay the bills that came with that. And this issue is very personal. The quality of life and, as Aaron said, palliative and hospice care, of putting people in their homes, this issue of end-of-life directives needs to be a conversation that we can have in this nation openly, that doesn't need to be politicized. It doesn't go to the heart of just dollars and cents. It goes to the heart of the dignity and the security of each and every one of those families. So I certainly would be and will be open to working with folks as we move to what I consider to be just a more humane and more person-centered focus of how we deal with end-of-life care.
Lori Swanson.
Yeah, I think these are important issues to have a conversation about. You know, we've all had family members who have gone through that type of situation, and there's no greater pain to a family than watching a loved one suffer and die from these health problems. We need to do a lot more in these kind of areas, just making it easier for people to engage in estate planning, to have, you know, as we have an aging population, we have 10,000 baby boomers every day retiring in this country, and helping people, you know, plan for long-term care as people are living longer, and, you know, making it easier and more consumer friendly for people to plan their health care. We also need to make sure we're actually taking care of patients in state institutions. One of the problems that happened during this legislative session is, you know, there were bills to protect our senior citizens who live in assisted living facilities and nursing homes from abuse, from sex abuse, from physical abuse. And that bill didn't get passed because of the consequence of how this legislative session went down, you know, passing 900-page bills in the dark of night where people don't have time to read them, to understand them. And as a result, that didn't become law. I think one of the important areas that's going to be on my plate is how do we protect our senior citizens? I favor licensing assisted living facilities, giving consumers better protections when they're in assisted living facilities so that they can't just be displaced from those facilities. When it comes to nursing homes, we have protections so they can't be discharged without cause. We don't have that for assisted living facilities, yet more and more seniors are living in those kind of institutions. And when they do, we need to protect them and keep them safe.
And just another quick answer, since you brought it up, yeah. Would you not allow those big 900-page bills if you were governor? Would you tell the legislature not to send a bill like that to you?
I would send a clear message to the legislature. Don't send me those kind of bills. Article 1 of the Constitution has a single subject clause, and it basically says every bill should have one single subject. Yet you're seeing the 900-page bills that have many, many subjects, and legislators end up voting for them because maybe they believe in one part, but they don't believe in the other part, or vice versa. They don't vote for it because there's one little piece they don't like. Mm-hmm. I think when it comes to legislative processes, it needs to be transparent. It needs to give people, both legislators and the time, to actually study in the public to study these bills, understand them. And I would send a clear message to the legislature that I don't want to be seeing garbage bills or Christmas tree bills that are 900 pages long.
And Tim Walz, what about you?
Changing the process to include the input on the front end, building the coalitions for what we're trying to do, and including budgeting in a different way. We should expect the same outcomes in gridlock if we do things the same way. I do think there's been a lot of folks talking about this. Former Speaker Paul Thiessen did a really nice job of talking about how we have to change that piece of it. As governor, I think it's building that trust with legislators to understand when we work together on the front end, when we have common goals, doesn't mean we're going to agree, doesn't mean we might have competing issues that are priority, but the way it's being done now, it erodes faith in our electoral system. It erodes people's trust. And anything that leads to cynicism, especially at this critical time, Minnesota's reputation as the state that worked was predicated on this very thing, that the legislative process must work better. As governor, as someone who's a consensus builder to try and find common solutions, that is an area that has to be a priority.
Aaron Murphy?
You know, I'm running for governor to be the governor for the people of Minnesota and to advance a future for them. And this is a sore point for them. They're super frustrated with what's been happening in the last number of years at the legislature. When I was the majority leader, we got our work done on time. I've been crystal clear about this. When I am the governor, if there is a bill that is put on my desk that hasn't had 24 hours of time for the legislature, for the public to have a look at it, I won't sign it into law, even if it's something that I support. I will be clear with the legislature that they need to do their work in the conference of committees again so that people, Minnesotans, have a chance to actually see what's happening. And I have seen governors successfully do this, and I will do this as well. I will be clear. I will send a message that's clear, and I will stick with my point of view. And I hope the legislature understands how serious I am about this, because that, when we are sending things to the governor with no time to review it, we see mistakes. It's really hurt our budget. Minnesotans are tired of it, and so am I.
Attorney General Swanson, I got an email just before we went on the air. It's another political question. Yesterday, this listener said, I received a very negative ad in the mail from what everyone is saying is a group affiliated or supporting the Swanson campaign. I think the Attorney General needs to be asked why she went negative in what has otherwise been a positive and good campaign for the DFL nomination. He adds, everyone I know is disappointed.
Okay, well, first of all, in terms of any mailings, it's not coming from me. There are various independent groups out there that are supporting or opposing, I think, all three of us.
But there's a TV ad. But,
yeah, so in terms of the TV ad, that's a factual ad. And Tim has been running ads now for quite a while, saying that he's hundreds of thousands of dollars spent on these ads, saying that he's taking on Donald Trump. The fact is, as Congressman Walz has missed this year 63% of his votes in the United States Congress, one of the most important things a congressman does is show up to vote. And when you miss 63% of your votes in Congress on really important issues, ranging from the farm bill, we have a farm crisis right now where we're in 4 to 5 years of low commodity prices. He missed that vote, and his hometown paper back in May said he was a no-show for missing those votes. He missed votes on sex trafficking, the opioid epidemic, the Defense Authorization Act to provide pay increases for our veterans. I think it's important when he's running ads saying he's going to is standing up to Donald Trump that people also know the fact is he's not been showing up to vote. In fact, he's got one of the worst voting records in the country when it comes to actually showing up this year to vote. Of 9 candidates for governor in this country who are running for Congress, Congressman Walz is the highest in terms of missed votes. And these are important times in Washington. You know, it's very important times with the president and some of the things he's trying to do to states and taking away our rights. And I think it's important that you do your basic job and show up to vote. You know, if you have a job at McDonald's, you're expected to make your shift. And if you miss shift after shift after shift at McDonald's, you're going to get fired from that job. And I think it's important people have a right to know that.
Tim Walz.
Well, I'm disappointed that Lori chose to go down the low road. I also know that as a member of Congress, you balance a lot of responsibilities. Between the voting piece of it, between being back when we have floods in southern Minnesota, and quite honestly, being back with family. I think the important thing to note here is, first of all, as far as Farm Bill goes, I am on the Farm Bill Conference Committee, one of 3 Midwesterners, when the work will be done that will actually lead to as we work on the issues. But more importantly, what I know is being across Minnesota to run for governor is being out and listening to their hopes and dreams, talking about what I can do as a public school educator to improve education in this state or healthcare. And they're very clear about this, that there are several things that they want to see out of our politics. And I'm proud of my campaign that I have stayed entirely positive, focusing on my issues. The one thing that they don't need is, and again, being very clear about it, name-calling out of our politics. We get plenty of that out of the White House right now. So here in Minnesota, the people of southern Minnesota have continuously sent me to Congress. They know that I deliver. They know that last week I was out with mayors as we've crafted together out of 21 county tour, 5 town halls, dozens of group meetings and hundreds of small group meetings to put a piece of legislation in that is being praised by those same editorial boards across this state as the way to change government. In a broken system in D.C., the ability to be able to bridge that gap to bring it back to Minnesota, and the reason that I believe all of the important fights are going to be done from the state level, as your governor, this is the capacity for us to break away from what's there, the break away from the gridlock, to make improvements in education, in healthcare, in transportation. And I think the voters of southern Minnesota, it's obvious the reason when these things happen is my One Minnesota campaign that has been joined by literally hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans has gained traction. So this is the direction you go. But I'm certainly proud of the work I've done. We'll continue to do it as your governor.
Aaron Murphy, you want to weigh in on this or just sit back and watch?
I don't want to get in between that, for sure. But I will say this. 20 months ago, I made the decision to run for governor, and I did because I believed it was time to put us back in our politics again, to put Minnesotans back in the driver's seat around the issues that matter to them and to really build a strong coalition of people who are ready to take on the status quo inside the Capitol so we can build a future together. And they're really tired of this kind of politics that we're listening to from the Attorney General and the Congressman. I'm not going to be that kind of a politician. I have seen across the state in these 20 months, Minnesotans, young people, women, people of color, rural progressives standing up because they're ready to join. They're ready to join together with me to build a future for the people of Minnesota. And I know that when we stand up for our values and we fight, we win. And that is how we're going to make progress together. It is time for us to engage again in a kind of politics of purpose. Sometimes we say the politics of joy. It does not have to be this negative all the time. And in fact, Minnesotans are rejecting that. They want to join a campaign that is talking about our shared future, our shared values. Our campaign is offering that. And that's why we're in such a strong position as we head into this primary. And that's how we're going to win the general election.
Your campaign, though, did make an issue out of the ratings from the NRA that your opponents have had in the past. You were the majority leader in the House of Representatives when the DFL had control of the legislature and the governor's office, and no gun control laws passed. Is that the politics of the future, or is that old-fashioned politics?
So I want to make sure that Minnesota is a place where no child has to go back to school and practice a lockdown drill. And I don't know if you heard the story of a preschool teacher teaching the children in her preschool class through a song how to participate in a lockdown drill. That is going to permeate their experience for the rest of their lives. That should not be Minnesota. We're not going to arm our teachers. And I don't want parents to be worried about their kids coming to school. I've always gotten an F from the NRA. That's right. And I think this is an important issue in this race because Congressman Walz and Attorney General Swanson have both gotten A's and A pluses. They've been doing the homework. They've been doing the extra credit. And when I was the majority leader and I watched our caucus go from a place of saying we can make progress on these issues to a fractured caucus because of the reach of the NRA, the reach of the gun lobby, I know that the congressman and the attorney general were standing with the NRA at the very time that was happening. That's a problem. They have too much power inside the Capitol, and Minnesotans need to know who will stand with them on this issue. I've always gotten an F. I'm going to continue to stand with Minnesotans on this issue. And when we put Minnesotans around the table, we can make real progress on background checks with no exceptions, on red flag laws, on banning the future sale of assault weapons in the state of Minnesota, and at looking at this issue as a public health issue. That's what I'm going to do when I'm the governor. I'm going to do that with the people of Minnesota.
Tim Walz.
Mike, your question was, why weren't those bills introduced? And what I don't deny for all of us is advocacy is one thing, but leadership and effectiveness is another. So it obviously didn't matter if Republicans were in charge or if Democrats were in charge. We still have a situation that I think is the false choice again, that it's no secret to anyone that I'm an avid outdoorsman. I grew up in a small community hunting with my family and friends. I also, it's no secret that I'm a teacher and a dad to a 17-year-old and 11-year-old. So when Hope comes home after Parkland and says, Dad, we have to do something, this issue of the nation changing, the NRA changing, and to be quite honestly, the folks we're going to need to actually get this done, responsible gun owners, if we can't welcome them in when there's a change of heart, if we can't welcome them in to make a difference to actually get this done, then it's simply advocacy and words. And at this point in time, like so many of these issues, I reject the notion that a responsible gun owner living in Cloquet heart is not breaking every time there's one of these shootings. But to blame them or to make the case because they're avid outdoorsmen or they might have belonged to the NRA doesn't get us any closer to a solution. So here in Minnesota, I absolutely believe I built this coalition to bring those folks in, and it doesn't change anything to have background checks, red flag laws, making sure we're banning bump stocks, making sure that if the federal government's not going to do it, and something that I have been voting for years, well before running for governor, on background checks and research at the Center for Disease Control. We can do that right here in Minnesota. These are the issues that people use as a wedge. These are the people that are well-meaning and advocates. But as a parent, I just want a result on it. I just want us to get this done. As a sportsman, I want us to do this in a manner that respects that Second Amendment rights, but with common sense legislation. As your governor, we'll actually not just talk about doing this. We will build the coalition necessary to actually move something when we have the opportunity to protect Minnesotans and to make this issue much more of an issue that is solvable rather than an advocacy and wedge issue.
Laurie Swanson, what would you do on guns? You've gotten a high rating from the NRA.
As Attorney General, I'm the only one in this race who's actually kept the public directly safe from gun violence by prosecuting gun violence. You know, I've met with families who have lost their loved ones to homicides and gun violence, you know, parents who have lost kids and spouses who have lost each other. And we need to keep the public safe, and we need to keep our kids safe in school. You know, one of the problems with this legislative session that ended is there was money that was going to be appropriated to schools to help them secure schools and make them safer places of learning so that parents don't have to be worried about putting their kid on the bus in the morning, knowing their kid can go to school and be safe. But it didn't pass because of the gridlock. And I would absolutely make sure we get our schools more money to help them stay safer and secure the buildings and make them safer while keeping them safe places of learning and places kids can be nurtured. We also need to increase the number of school counselors in our schools. Minnesota is fourth from the bottom of the number of counselors in schools. For every 723 children, there's only one counselor. And that comes at a time when we have both gun violence, but we also have increased suicides. We have an opioid epidemic. We need to put money into counselors so that we can identify both the kids who are troubled, who might cause violence in schools, and also the kids who are suffering from mental illness. And then I support things like background checks. We need to have and should have enhanced background checks. I support the ability of judges to take guns away from people upon the petition of law enforcement and due process of law who are mentally very dangerous and pose a threat to themselves or others. I also think we have to look at things like bump stocks that are incredibly dangerous.
Erin Murphy, I think you wanted one more word on it.
Yeah, I did, because this is important in Minnesota. It's an issue that has really emerged, and there are significant differences between myself and the congressman and the attorney general on this issue. When we took the issue up in 2013 after Sandy Hook, we had a legislative caucus that was willing to take action. There were bills introduced. There were multiple days of hearings. And I watched the Reach the Gun Lobby, not Minnesotans, not responsible gun owners, but the gun lobby itself reach into the legislature and fracture the consensus that was there. And while that happened, the congressman was doing videos with the NRA. The attorney general was accepting their endorsement and, in fact, work that they have done in the Congress and as the attorney general is going to make it harder for us here in the state of Minnesota to actually advance common sense solutions. There is a significant difference here. Minnesotans are demanding urgent action on this issue. And I have watched policymakers in the past say, I'm going to work with this coalition of people, include the gun lobby, sometimes behind the scenes. That's what stopped our progress. I will not do that. I'm going to fight for the people of Minnesota.
Okay.
I'm going to make sure our kids are safe in school.
In
the governor, you want results, not just talk. And the fact is, I mean, Erin is saying these things now, but Erin didn't become the chief author of a gun bill until about 3 months ago, long after she was running for governor, after she'd been in the legislature for a dozen years. It was introduced after the filings closed for bills, after the hearings closed, and there was no Senate companion. And so, Erin, it's easy to say that, but the fact is, as a legislator, you haven't been chief authoring these bills.
General Swanson, I began my work on gun violence prevention back in 1999 as a board member for Citizens for Safer Minnesota. This has been a long and challenging effort on my part for many, many years. I have the experience and understand what's actually happening.
And I've been fighting gun violence as Attorney General for many, many years.
Tim Walz.
And I'd like to note that over years of voting for some of those issues and now being an F rated by the NRA, and more importantly, I think being a gun sense candidate of distinction for Moms Demand Action, as well as the support from probably the most important constituency in this, survivors of gun violence that have been their families, of people who are coming out and making the case that now, if we are not going to allow people to move in a direction that gets sense on this, if they are not, didn't do it soon enough to be acceptable, we will never, ever solve this issue. So we want to encourage and welcome people to come in on the issue. It's not about who's purist. It's about who has the capacity to actually move things that make a difference in people's lives. As your governor, I have a track record of doing it. This will just be one of those issues, again, that we can break the cycle of the bickering, the division, and find solutions.
I had a lot of questions from listeners about copper nickel mining, and many of them, I think, boil down to this. If state and federal environmental regulators approve permits for copper nickel precious metal mining, would you or could you prevent it from happening? And Attorney General Swanson, start with you.
We have laws in place at both the federal and the state level that provide for a very rigorous environmental review process before there can be any mining. Those are the rules we have. It can take many years in the making, many layers of review. And I think what we have done as Minnesotans is we allow mining in a way that's also safe for the environment. You know, the people who live on the Iron Range want to have clean drinking water for their kids and their families. And that's been the track record in Minnesota, is to mine in a way that's responsible and keeps the water safe and clean. And that's our track record in Minnesotans. And I think we can do both. I don't think it has to be an either or proposition where you have mining or you have clean water. We have to do both. And what I would do as governor is appoint commissioners who would lead executive branch agencies who would engage in a rigorous, fair, independent process and follow the science and listen to the science.
Erin Murphy.
So I want to make sure the listeners know that I will protect the crown jewel of the Boundary Waters. It is critically important to Minnesota and to our future. I've been supported now by the Friends of the Boundary Waters, by Sierra Club, by Minnesota Climate 350 for my strong environmental record. It is important that we protect our strategic asset of water. And as the governor, it's my job to follow the law and to enforce the law. And there is one thing that I hear over and over from people who are concerned about our water. And I think we have to be honest with one another that there are many things that we do in the state of Minnesota that threaten our water, whether it is potential copper nickel mining, the development of communities like Hugo and what it did to White Bear Lake, the salting that we do to our highways and freeways, and to agriculture in some cases, can be very hard on our water. My job is to protect our water, to protect our future. And the thing that frustrates people is when they see people in power, people who are in elected office, circumventing the law and stripping the opportunity of Minnesotans to fully participate in this. I won't do that. I'm going to follow the law. I'm going to enforce the law and enforce it fairly. And when I'm the governor, we're going to invest more in research at the University of Minnesota, at the Natural Resources and Research Institute, to make sure that we are finding better solutions to protect our strategic asset of water. It's no good
for
us.
Would you stop the Twin Metals project, though?
I'm going to follow the law and the permitting process. It is in federal land. This is a state and federal issue. It's important that we follow the law, and I'm going to do that. But I'm going to protect that precious gem of the Boundary Waters.
Congressman Walz.
On your question on Twin Metals, I actually voted on that to leave that in to make sure we do the environmental reviews, that the science must be followed. But it's important to recognize several factors that don't have to be competing factors. Our miners, and whether it be our miners, our farmers, our loggers, we built this country. Whether it's taconite, are now taking a look at if it's copper and the precious metals to move towards a clean energy economy. There's 5.5 tons of copper in every megawatt of solar panels. There's 200 pounds in every Tesla. So to try and make sure that we as this nation look at, is this a possible way? Are all safety procedures, all environmental reviews, all permitting? And I think incredibly importantly, doing something that hasn't been done before, liability, making sure that that's in place. But that's a false choice against the Boundary Waters. And I think what's interesting here as we get this, I have the endorsements of the construction trades, like the steelworkers who work in those mines. I was up there earlier this week at a shift change at 4:30 at MinTac, watching folks come in wanting to do a living, wanting to do for their family. I also have the protectors of the Boundary Waters. It's the capacity to be able to bring in environmental groups as well as the folks who are going to do the job to strike that balance that's necessary. And the personal side of this, if anyone on the Boundary Waters, I have been canoeing. I have a Winona solo prism that I have used for many years. I've taken my players up to the Boundary Waters to build team building. And I also lost a brother 2 years ago in a blowdown that grievously injured my nephew. This place is sacred to me. It's sacred to Minnesotans. As your governor, I will do nothing that puts at risk that sacred place, but I will continue to praise, to build, and to make sure that if we have the solutions to build the clean energy economy, we have the solution to create jobs, I will stand there and make it happen.
We're almost out of time, and I want to give you time to wrap up at the end, so I need a quick answer for this one. You've talked about legal marijuana for recreational use. Attorney General, would you support that?
At this point, I don't for recreational purposes. I do for medical purposes, and I support looking at expanding it for medical purposes. The issue on recreational for me has to do with driving. You know, I handle in the Attorney General's office about 4,500 drunk driving cases a year. I see cases where people lose loved ones on the highway. Marijuana today is so much more potent than it used to be in the past.
Okay.
And I'm concerned that at this point, we haven't yet shown the technology to make sure people are driving in a safe way.
And Congressman Walz?
Yes, regulate, tax, Minnesota grown, and then I would go back and expunge those records of folks that we are overcrowding our prisons with for marijuana infractions that should be out productively adding into our society.
And Erin Murphy?
I support it. It's an issue for justice and health from my perspective. I want the legislature to fully litigate the issue. They have to take up the issue of expungement. We have to talk about nonviolent offenders and whether they remain in prison, they should be released. If the legislature can take that up and fully litigate it, I would sign it.
Okay, I will give you about, 40 seconds each here to sort of wrap up. And Attorney General, let's start with you. Why should people vote for you on Tuesday?
Sure. You know, Minnesota's a wonderful state. My dad grew up in Duluth during the Depression and played hockey but couldn't afford hockey skates. My mom grew up near Orr, Minnesota, one of nine kids in a two-bedroom house with no indoor plumbing and no indoor electricity. Very poor during the Depression, yet here we are because of the education that Minnesota gave them and the opportunities Minnesota gave them. Their daughter can be running for governor of this state. I want all our families to have that same kind of opportunity. I believe that Minnesota does best when we grow from the middle out, not the top down, when everybody should play by the same rules and get a fair shot, and when our children should be able to aim higher and dream bigger and do better than okay. their parents. We have gridlock in our politics today. We can end that and we can move Minnesota forward.
And Congressman Walz.
I'd like to thank Minnesotans for the privilege of meeting them in their homes, their workplaces, their coffee shops. I'm a school teacher from Mankato, a football coach. I'm the highest ranking enlisted soldier in this nation's history to serve in Congress. And I'm also an eternal optimist about this state. The hopes and dreams of Minnesotans, the belief that our politics can be predicated on a good that we all come together. The idea that our neighbors may see things a little differently, but they share those core values. The idea that we can have a governor of Minnesota as a public school teacher stand up and say, those public school teachers who come every day to work deserve the best for our students. I ask everybody, I hope I can earn your vote this Tuesday. Tim Walz, Peggy Flanagan will do this for you.
And Erin Murphy.
Thank you, Mike Mulcahy, and thank you to the listeners. I am Erin Murphy. I'm a registered nurse, a mom, and a state legislator running for governor because I want to build a future and I want to do it with the people of Minnesota. Over the last 20 months, we have built a very strong coalition of people across the state who are ready to work together and to build that future. We're not just ready to win the primary, we're ready to win the general election, and we are ready to build the state to make sure that people have access to health care, and we put care before profits, to stop the NRA from blocking common sense gun reforms, to make sure that we are protecting our clean air and our clean water. And I am ready to do this job. I have served in the House for 12 years, Mike Mulcahy. I am ready to lead the state. Thank you very much. I hope to earn your support.
Thank you, all candidates. I really appreciate it. That's our program for today. It's up to you now. Go vote on Tuesday. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. And hi, I'm Mike Mulcahy here. We're back because we ran out of time on the radio to analyze a little bit about what we just heard in that debate. I'm joined by Brianna Biersbach and Brian Baxt, our two political reporters. What did you guys think of the debate?
It was a little less colorful than the one we had a week ago with the Republicans. And part of that is because there are three candidates. And so you have to, they're tiptoeing around each other because being as negative or pointing out as aggressively the differences can sometimes backfire and potentially put the support in the hands of a third candidate. There was some colorful exchanges on guns. They got pretty animated over, you know, whether you can find consensus or need to be a purist, as Tim Walz was suggesting. And then there was also some interesting answers around marijuana, which separated them a little bit.
Yeah, I thought it was striking how they didn't necessarily go after each other as much. I mean, at the end of the day, one of these candidates is going to win, and they're going to have to go on to the general election ballot, and they're all Democrats. And, you know, at the end of this primary, Democrats want a Democrat in that office. But there were clear points, as Brian mentioned, on guns, also recreational marijuana. I thought that was interesting that Lori Swanson said she doesn't support that, whereas the other two candidates do. That's, I don't think, something I've heard before today. So I thought that was an interesting distinction as well. And you also really saw them all trying to define themselves through the answers of all their questions. Mm. You know, Murphy really did, I think, what's the strongest on immigration in terms of, you know, where she what she would do in terms of the progressive base. And Swanson definitely talked, I'm a problem solver. I've done this in the courtroom. Now I'll do it as governor. And Walz really stressed the One Minnesota Coalition building piece that's been part of his campaign this whole time. So it was a nice way to see those parts of their message play out.
And aside from that gun issue, you really had to read between the lines when they were trying to talk about how they differ from another candidate. Aaron Murphy brought up the refugee vote that Tim Walz took, but never mentioned Tim Walz's name. Hmm. She kind of made fun or made light of the Lori Swanson plan to meet with all 201 lawmakers by saying breaking bread with lawmakers just doesn't cut it. So, but you had to kind of get there on your own. There wasn't a lot of them pointing to differences that they have with another candidate on the stage.
And I have to say that's part of the problem. Moderating a three-person debate is it's hard to draw them back on point or make that distinction when there's someone else, you know, who wants to get in. And so, you know, debates, I guess, are limited in their value. But at least the voters, I think, got to hear what they wanted to say. And a lot of people did send me questions, and I tried to ask as many as I could. You mentioned the issue of marijuana and the differences with Lori Swanson. Isn't part of the problem here that we haven't heard much from Lori Swanson in this very short campaign? She only got into the race the 1st of June. And so I have to say I wasn't aware of her stand on a lot of the issues.
Yeah, I think given the late entrance of her into the race and also her campaign style, you know, she's been out in limited events, but, you know, doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes, fundraising. I mean, we didn't find out about her stance on guns until partway through the race. You didn't find out the recreational piece until today, unless other people knew that. I didn't. I don't remember ever hearing the answer to it. So I think that's part of the, you know, nature of her getting in late and her style of campaigning as well. And I think in general, people just don't know a lot about her, and that's kind of coming out in some of the coverage, that she runs a very tightly controlled office. She's not kind of a glad-handy politician. She says that about herself. That's not my style. I answer emails. I answer phone calls. I think you saw that. That's something she'll say, but also you realize that people don't know a lot about her as she's running for this very high-profile office.
And one of the interesting things that these debates have brought out is just how much a governor has to contend with, just the scope of issues. We didn't really even get to any questions about the budget and where they would take the state budget. They're largely in line on that. They're all talking about education as a foundational element of any budget. But, you know, compared to the Republicans who were eager to talk about cutting taxes, they didn't draw the conversation in that direction either in this debate.
And the other thing about Lori Swanson, I think, because she hasn't come out and said where she stands on a lot of things, is that one of the reasons why we're seeing here with just a few days to go, suddenly the spotlight is turning on her with these stories in The Intercept about how she ran her office with the ad she did against Tim Walz, which, you know, he said was taking the low road and going negative. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I thought it was interesting. I mean, this coverage has been kind of one thing after another for the last, I mean, before the two Intercept pieces, there were the Rick Nolan story as well about her running mate. And it kind of shows when you rush into a race. I don't know if she knew she was exactly running for governor based off of what happened at the DFL convention. You know, she stepped out of the endorsement race for attorney general and then jumped into the governor's race. You know, you wonder how much vetting went on, how much they were expecting some of these things to come out. But this is a primary that is completely open. I don't think anyone knows what's going to happen. It just shows how I think fearful some individuals are that she could win, people who don't support her. But it is interesting to see this all come out in this tight time frame of a primary, really quickly, things that haven't come out for years. She's been attorney general for three terms, 12 years since 2006. So it's very interesting to see this all right now.
And I want to emphasize a point that Brianna made. All three of these candidates have a realistic path on Tuesday. To count any of them out would be a mistake. You know, there's been some polling, some limited polling that has, you know, how much you can capture who's going to turn on a primary is open to debate. Mm-hmm. But any of these three candidates has a shot at advancing to November. Just like on the Republican side, either of those two, you can make the case for one of them getting there. No one has a lock on either of these primaries just a few days out.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that, you know, when you look at the money, Tim Walz, I think, has raised more money than the others. He's been running these positive ads, basically. Lori Swanson has raised money and spent most of it on ads, at least as of last report. Erin Murphy, not as much money, but she's got that DFL endorsement. So it's really hard to weigh what exactly will happen here.
Well, and as we speak, the Democrats are holding their kickoff to kind of a three-day get-out-the-vote push, and the DFL endorsement has carried some value in the past, not always, but has carried in the past because their boots on the ground, their phone calls, there are lists that they get. But these other candidates have either name ID, you know, and Lori Swanson being well-known, having won three times statewide with big margins, and Tim Walz, who's built up this network and coalition of labor unions and local officials and state lawmakers who are supporting him. They've all got their own little turnout mechanism. Let's just see who gets activated the most, and Tuesday night could be fun.
And one thing to note about all the polls is in each one of them, one of the common elements was a huge number of undecided voters, a number that could swing the race in potentially any direction. There's a lot of people who I saw tweets while the debate was going on saying, I think I figured out finally who I'm going to vote for based on listening to this. There's people who don't know yet who they're going to vote for. You know, they might wake up on Tuesday and say, oh, I think I'm going to go vote in the primary and do some quick research about the candidates. I mean, there's a lot of undecideds and people who don't know where they're going yet. And, you know, they have time still yet to make up their mind.
Mm-hmm. We did have a question on Facebook. What's one thing you're watching closely on primary night? If only there were just one thing.
Who wins?
No, just where the turnout is. I mean, obviously the 5th district, there's going to be a higher turnout than usual because that congressional race where that primary more or less will decide the next member of Congress from that district. The 8th district, there's going to be substantial turnout because there's a primary election there for the nominee for that open congressional seat. And is it going to follow in other parts of the state? I mean, are the first and the 7th going to be heavy on the DFL side, or, you know, are they going to be more decisive on the Republican side? Those will be the things. Kind of where that turnout is coming in will say a lot about who will come out on top.
And also turnout in general, how many people are going to show up? There's suggestion with early voting that there people are excited about these races. You know, how many Republicans show up to vote in the primary versus how many Democrats show up to vote in the primary. That could be really interesting other than just the ultimate winner in all these contests.
And we should tell everybody we will be on the air on Tuesday night on the radio, probably starting around 9 o'clock or so when we start to get some results in. And we'll have reporters deployed all around. We'll be on social media. So if you're watching on your phone, I think we'll have you covered. Although the way this is shaping up, we might not know who wins some of these elections until very late or early Wednesday. And let's hope by then.
Or beyond, right. I mean, some of the election officials are preparing for the possibility that there might be recounts in one or more races because things could be tight and the turnout could be small enough where you know, a couple people are bunched pretty close.
And we should say we'll have all the results online as well. Also, what do we know about the Republicans now? We had them in last week. They went at each other much more than these DFLers did. Tim Pawlenty and Jeff Johnson, anything we learned in the past week that sheds any more light on that contest?
No, I mean, out at the Farm Fest debate and then after the Farm Fest debate, they've been still carrying on this conversation about who's the most conservative versus, you know, who has gotten the most done. Tim Pawlenty tried to make the case that he's both conservative and has a record of accomplishment. Jeff Johnson has tried to say that Tim Pawlenty has strayed from that conservatism, but at the same time, he's had to be a voice of resistance in his spot because he's never really held a position of power where he's been an influential voice. So that's kind of where that race has come down.
And I think a lot, they're going to be out at events and talking to voters, but I think a lot of this race is playing out on the airwaves. I've been looking at campaign finance numbers. Tim Pawlenty has had a pretty extraordinary amount of negative ads spent against him, both from independent groups and basically all the other candidates mention him in one ad or another, and even candidates not running against him mention him. He's raised a lot of money and spent a decent amount, nearly $1 million on ads himself. But it's pretty striking, you know, how many ads mention him. And Jeff has an ad out also mentioning him. So I wonder how that plays ultimately into the race. I mean, advertising is can be a powerful medium. It's also the middle of the summer. So I don't know. Maybe people are just turning their TVs off.
There again, We don't know what's going to happen. So stick with us. One more weekend to go. Brianna Biersbach, Brian Bax, thanks a lot for being here. One more weekend to go. We'll be there on Tuesday night. We'll let you know what happened, but it's really up to you. Get out there and vote. Hope these forums helped. We'll see you later.